say, first things first, one sheeters are due, so if you have them, please pass them up. If it is more than one sheet and it is not stapled, please make sure your name is on every page so you get credit for what you do. Alright, your midterms are done. By and large, they're putting in pretty well. Midterms are the kind of thing where you either really got it or you really didn't. So, really not much middle ground there. I'm going to pass these back real quickly so you can see your score, but I do need these back. So when you're done taking a look at it, please give it back to me.
Can anyone have a phone?
Yeah. So we got to move on a little bit. We're still in the wonderful world of sales. The whole point last week in introducing you to sales was introducing you to a couple of vital concepts, one of which we will touch on again today, actually quite a bit. Remember, as we discussed last week, sales isn't actually about sales. Sales is about relationships, specifically long-term relationships as it relates to broadcasting. So it's very different from the short-term customer comes in retail kind of model where you're lucky you get who you get. You like repeat business in retail, but you don't expect repeat business in retail. In broadcasting, when you're doing a business-to-business relationship, repeat business is key. And that means that the relationship is key, because if that relationship doesn't start out well, then you're in trouble. To that end, since this is about relationships, right?
Yes.
In many ways, the most important part of the relationship is that initial phase of contact, okay? The first impression, right? And if you've ever pursued anybody and perhaps made a bad first impression, it usually does not go well for you. You're making up for that bad first impression for the rest of your life in some cases. Sometimes you just never get anywhere because, you know, whoever it was met you at the wrong time or in the wrong way. Saw you doing something stupid once, and that was it, right? You're branded forever as, the person who just didn't do the right thing or can't do the right thing or whatever. So it's really hard to make up for a bad first impression. So to that end, I want to talk a little bit about things that you should not do, okay? Remember, you're starting a relationship here. So there are certain things that you would not do if you were starting a personal relationship. And some of those things carry over if you're starting a professional relationship. There are some things you should not do. I'm going to open this up to the room. Some of you guys have some sales experience. If you were going to do something if you were meeting somebody for the first time, professionally speaking, that is, if you were meeting somebody for the first time, what is one thing you would not want to do? What do you think?
Talk about politics and religion.
Okay, well, okay, true. Very good point. They always say never talk about those two things when you're on a date. And I suppose that's true in business as well, until you get to know your client a little bit better, and then you might know what you can get away with and what you can't. That's true. Not what I was thinking, but we'll go with it. What do you think?
Dress in what's generally conceived as a business type attire.
Okay. We're talking primarily, at the moment, we're talking about do nots.
Oh,
but I do.
Do's.
But you bring up a good point.
Switch do into do.
Right, exactly. Let me address a couple of these one at a time. If we're talking about do nots at the moment, one of the things that just got brought up is dress inappropriately. Now, you're exactly right in that most people expect you to have what we call business casual kind of look, which means usually, you know, some sort of slacks and a shirt with a collar. If you're a guy, usually some sort of coat. Not necessarily a tie, but at least, you know, some sort of something you would wear to work or maybe to church that isn't too dressy, that kind of thing, right? But even that has conditions, okay? Because appropriate can have lots of different connotations, right? Just like you have a bunch of different outfits depending on where you're going, right? There are some outfits you wouldn't wear to church or you wouldn't wear to a wedding. Depending on your client, there are some things you may or may not wear. And that depends on the business that you're going to, right? For example, if I am looking out for a fairly conservative client, let's say WJR, which is a fairly conservative talk station here in town. They go for higher-end clients, lots of accountants, lawyers, higher-end auto dealers, that kind of thing, right? Those clients are going to expect me to show up probably in a suit, or at least in business casual, probably, you know, again, shirt with a collar and a coat of some kind, or something fairly conservative. Right? That's just what they expect. That's what they're used to. But let's flip it around a little bit. And for example, if you are working for 89X, right, or 106.7, the new classic rock station in town, maybe had a little different clientele, or say the RIP, right, different, totally different demographic. You working for 89X, one of the places you may go is, for example, a tattoo shop. Tattoo shop would never get, it would not be caught dead on WJR. It just doesn't fit their demographic, right? It's not who they're interested in. But it's absolutely who 89X is going after, right? You show up in a tattoo parlor in a three-piece suit, they're going to look at you and go, why is the cop here? Right? It's going to put you off. It's going to put them in an awkward position, and they're going to be wondering, okay, do you know what we do here? Why are you here? You know, you're going to look and feel out of place. So appropriate or inappropriate in this case does have some conditions attached to it. This is part of getting to know your client. Again, we're going to come back to that again and again. So dressing appropriately or not dressing inappropriately is something you want to avoid. What else? What do you think?
I have a question. If we had like an interview with 89X or 101, we don't have to wear.
Good question. That's not what I'm saying. Okay. And please do not show up in an interview wearing cutoffs and a t-shirt and going, well, you know, Eric said we could wear whatever we wanted. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is that different clients have different expectations, and you should know what those are or try to figure out what those are. For example, some clients would not want to see tattoos at all. Mm-hmm. So you would roll your sleeves down or make sure that they are covered. Whereas other clients don't. They don't care. Mm-hmm. But again, that's you have to find that out about your client going in.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things you have to be careful about. That's what I mean. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Okay.
Cool. Thanks. Good question. What else would you not want to do if you're making that first impression? What do you think?
Be late.
Right. That's one. Absolutely. You must be on time. Do not be late. In fact, you want to be early. Now, that's not to say that, you know, something might happen. You might get caught in traffic or, God forbid, have an accident. If that's the case, call immediately. Like, the second call you should make after you call 911 or whatever is to wherever you were going, to your client, and say, here's why I'm not going to be able to meet with you. Because if you don't, they're going to assume that you did not take their appointment seriously. And they're going to decide, well, you don't have time for me. I'm not going to have time for you. And being late is the same thing. You might have things to take care of, but your client's going to expect that you do that before you go to their appointment, because you are asking them to take time out of their day to meet with you. So you need to take that seriously. So being early for a client says a lot about how prepared you are and how seriously you're prepared to take the job. And again, I realize that sometimes things come up that are out of your control. If that happens, contact the client as soon as you possibly can and explain the situation so that at least they know it was on your radar and you didn't just blow them off. Because that's going to be the first assumption. If you're late or if you for some reason don't show, they're going to say, oh, all right, guess I don't need to talk to you ever again. Right? And so you don't want to burn that bridge, especially when you haven't even done anything yet. Okay? Let's see, what else? Any other ideas about things you would not want to do? What else? What do you think?
You don't want to give a handshake that lacks confidence.
Okay, good point. There are many interviewers and business folks will tell you that confidence is key. There is a difference, though, between being confident and being cocky. So I'm going to put down, you don't want to be cocky, but you do want to be confident. You have to be prepared and you have to know what you're talking about. But you don't want to be too aggressive or too over the top. Because the reality is, these people know their business, most of them. So you may know what you're doing, but you don't want to walk in all swagger, no substance. Okay? Attitude is good. You need to have a certain amount of confidence in order to do well in sales, especially, or anything, really. But too much confidence can set the wrong impression. And again, that's something you want to avoid. So while confidence is good, and the handshake is part of that, you don't want to be cocky going in. Anything else? Tim, what do you think?
Well, you just mentioned it. Come unprepared.
All right, yes. Do not You want to be prepared when you meet a client. You have to know what you're going to talk about. That's part of what the one-sheeter is for. The one-sheeter represents at least some of the ideas that you put together for your client. Okay? I have at least a rough idea of what I'm ready to present to you. Now, that may change. Hopefully, it will if you talk to your client and you do a little bit of back and forth. But you must at least have something ready to tell them. And that's why, again, that's why we did the one-sheeter last week, so we could talk about this week. Okay? One thing feeds into the next. A couple other things I want to talk about. We hit almost everything I want to hit on this list. Excuse me. One more thing I want to talk about, and it seems kind of obvious.
Curse.
Thank you.
Language.
You want to watch your language? So do you want to curse? We'll put that over here. Even if the client does, sometimes that's a test. They may do something inappropriate on purpose to see if you take the bait, because they want to know who they're dealing with. Along these same lines, even if the client says it's okay, even if you're meeting with a client in a bar, do not, and I cannot emphasize this enough, do not drink with a client, ever. I say this because I have some personal experience with this, not myself, but I worked with a sales guy up north who was a fantastic salesman until he started being a little too social with his clients, and he literally would, you know, go, that he'd do all his business in a bar. And at first it started out great, but then he had a problem. And pretty soon he was forgetting deals that he would make. He was forgetting things that he would forget things that he had promised clients. And he eventually just, he was out of control. And it got worse than that. I don't need to bother you with those details. But he was, you know, to the point where he was worried too much about getting along with the client, being the client's friend, and not taking care of business. And we're going to talk about that fine line as well. You need to maintain a wall of separation, because this comes back to one of the things I talked about last week. You are not there to be your client's friend. There is a difference between being friendly and being friends. You do want to be friendly and approachable and agreeable and all those good things, right? You know, a smile and be in a good mood. But you are not there to be friends with these people. This is business. And there's that old saying, you know, you never go into business with friends or family, right? Because sooner or later, you may have to do something you don't want to do. And if you're too friendly with your client, it's going to be that much harder, you know, sooner or later. And again, I'm not saying you can't get along, but there is a difference between being friendly and being friends. And you have to understand that separation. One other thing that I want to talk about, it seems kind of counterintuitive, but I want to talk about it for a minute. We shamelessly want to do better than our competition, but you do not want to bash your competition, and there's a couple reasons for that. First reason is very simple. Clients talk. Clients talk to each other, and if you've got somebody in your market who is a fairly big wheeler and dealer, they're probably advertising with somebody else. If you can beat your client, if you can beat your competition, then explain how you can beat your competition. You don't want to beat your competition by saying, "Oh well, you know, those guys at 105, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. They suck. You should go with us because they're all idiots." That may be true, and you may even believe it. Okay, but here's the thing about this business. You can ask the guys at 106.7 about this. Sooner or later, your station's going to get sold. It's going to happen. Your station's going to get sold, or there's going to be a format flip, or something out of your control may well leave you without a job, through no fault of your own, by the way. Because when stations get sold, when formats get flipped, everybody, and I mean everybody, gets let go, whether they did a good job or not. That's just the way these things usually work. So, you may find yourself where you were previously perfectly comfortable at, say, 101. All of a sudden, they clean house. Where are you going to go? If you've spent your entire career explaining to 105 that they're idiots, you can't go there. Because they're going to say, "Oh, gee, Steve, nice to see you, but I don't think we're going to hire you because we're morons." Isn't that right? Haven't we been idiots for 10 years? You don't want to work for idiots, do you? So it might come back to haunt you. So you need to be careful. Uncle Kernan always says, never burn a bridge. That's what we mean. If you can beat your competition, great. Beat your competition. But don't do it by running them down. Be honest about it. And that brings us to something that's going to be very important going forward. People always ask, what's the secret to success in sales? If I had to break it down, I'd break it down like this. And I'm sorry to bust out the math on you. But this is really what it boils down to. HW plus H equals S. What'd you say?
Hard work.
Hard work. That's what the HW is. Exactly right. Hard work means running down your clients, figuring out where they are, and going to find them. We talked last week about prospects. That's what the hard work is. Your clients will not come to you. No matter how good you are, no matter how important your station is, no matter how successful your station may be, your clients will not find you. You have to find them. So that's part of that is but knowing what clients will fit your demographic, also doing a research about those clients and finding out what they need. Ask questions about them. We'll talk about that a little later on today. The other H is something we've already talked about, but I want to... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Honesty.
Thank you. Yes, exactly right. We talked about this also last week. Honesty. You have to be honest when you're dealing with other people's money. You have got to do what you say you're going to do. There is still a segment of the sales population, the world of sales, that thinks it's totally fine to just take the money and run. I'm gonna run an angle on you. I'm gonna hustle a little bit. You know why? Because that's what somebody would do to me. Maybe that's true. I don't know. I will say that might be true for other businesses. You do that in a broadcast setting, you're done. Because more so than any other business I've ever been exposed to, people in broadcasting talk. We talk to each other all the time. Even people who are fierce rivals across town. We all go to the same conferences. We all know the same people. It's like this really, really huge but also really, really tiny fraternity. Because we are all like 2 or 3 degrees away from knowing everybody else. It's just the way this business works because people move around a lot. And so if you get a reputation for being somebody who burns clients, your clients are going to talk. Word's going to get out. And you're done. So you have to be honest with your clients whenever possible. Do what you say you're going to do. That may sound familiar because I've said it before in a slightly different context, but it's still true. Okay? So hard work, honesty, the last one is easy.
Success,
right. Success or sales. Or if you were paying attention to Uncle Kernan's class, Scooties.
There you go.
I don't know if he still calls them Scooties or not.
Oh, yes.
Does he? All right, Scooty Woodies, there you go. That's what the S is for. So hard work and honesty equals success. If you can pull those two things off, you're doing a lot better. All right? Now, this sets up and reviews a lot of what we talked about last week. I want to talk about in some specific detail about one of the most dreaded things in the world of sales. And sooner or later, no matter how good you are, or no matter what your circumstances might be, you are going to have to deal with the two scariest words in the English language. That is the cold call. How many commission salespeople or former commission salespeople do we have in the audience? A couple of you? Okay. Not very many.
A couple.
Former commission salespeople? Anybody work for commission? Wow, okay, one or two of you. All right.
Well, not totally, but you know, part of it.
Okay. The reason I say this is because no matter how good you are as a salesman, no matter how good you are at your job, nobody likes cold calls. Nobody likes to do it. Even if you're good at it, you don't like to do it. And it's dirty little secret time. I used to work, when I was in college, I worked for a company called Vector Marketing. I love doing that because there's always a Vector Marketing is the company that runs Cutco, the knife folks. You may have seen their ads in the paper for, you know, making 13, 14, 15 bucks an hour. Sounds like a great deal until you realize how much you have to sell to make 13, 14, 15 bucks an hour. Right. The reason I bring them up is because cold calling is part of their business model. But the way they get to the cold call is a little bit, it's a little different. You start by setting up appointments with people you know. And at the end of that presentation, and some people were nodding, I'm willing to bet that a couple of you had done that. You start by talking to people you know. And at the end of your presentation, you ask for a referral. Remember we talked a couple weeks ago that word of mouth is the best way to get the word out? Right? So you ask for a word of mouth referral. You say, you know, thanks very much for your time. Can you think of anybody else who might enjoy this presentation today? And they'll usually be nice and throw you a bone and give you, you know, three or four or five names. And so then the next day you call those people. And you say, hi, Mrs. Smith, listen, I was talking to Larry down the street from you, and he said that I should give you a call. Right? Absolutely call them out. You're counting on that personal reputation and relationship. Okay? But sooner or later, the farther you get out from the people that you personally know, sooner or later you're talking to people who don't know you and don't know who you're talking about when you get to the referral. So sooner or later, you're going to have to make a cold call. And that's when stuff gets hard. And the reason for that is very, very simple. A lot of people treat cold calls the way they do sales in general. And one of the things we talked about last week is the reason why salespeople have a bad reputation is because there are a lot of bad salespeople out there. There are a lot of people who don't know how to handle cold calls. I want to talk about that because, like I say, sooner or later, you're going to have to do it. And while I cannot promise that the things I'm about to tell you about will guarantee a sale on a cold call, they will hopefully cause your odds to go up. One thing you need to understand right now, cold calling is not about getting a sale. Much like sales is not actually about sales, cold calls are not actually about getting a sale. Cold calls are about getting an appointment to get a sale. So your end goal is not to get a sale on the phone that day. It's about getting an appointment so you can get a sale later. And that's the first roadblock you have to get over. Okay? Because too many times you make a cold call, you tell people where you're from, and they say, not interested. Because they assume you're there to sell them something, right? They assume that you're a telemarketer. They assume that you want a check today, right now. And that is not the case. The odds of you selling something directly from a cold call, I'm not going to say it's impossible, because even a broken clock is right twice a day. Occasionally you will get lucky, but it's very, 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 very slim. Probably not going to happen, okay? It might, and that's the greatest day ever, because you didn't have to do anything that day. But it's probably not going to happen. Because the odds of making a sale are very, very low in that initial meeting, here's what you need to do to get your odds to go up. There are five things you need to do. Number one, get permission to be there. I should emphasize also that this, all of these things assume an in-person meeting. When you're doing a cold call to set up an appointment, you should be there in person. Do not call and expect to have a meeting that day. You may call to set up an appointment to eventually get a meeting, but this is all assuming FaceTime, because phone calls are pretty easy to ignore. Email, forget about it. How many emails do you get every day that you just delete without even opening? Mm-hmm.
Tons.
Exactly. If you do it, why should you expect that your clients are going to be any different? You may send them an email with the greatest idea ever, and if they don't know you, they're probably not going to open that up unless they know it's coming. Okay? So you need to get permission to be there. That means getting through the gatekeeper, whoever the gatekeeper is. If it's a receptionist or an assistant manager or, you know, a floor manager or even just the greeter at the door, right, the security guard or whatever. Get on the schedule. If you become part of the day, then you're not adding to what's already a busy, crowded, overworked day, right? If you just show up and say, hey, listen, can I have 5 minutes of your time? They're going to say no. So make the appointment ahead of time, right? Get on the schedule. Then you only plan to meet with them for about 5 minutes, maybe 10 if you're lucky. If they want to talk for more than that, okay, fine. But the initial meeting should only be about 5 to 10 minutes. Why is that, do you think?
What do you think?
You don't turn them off, and you don't get that later sale.
Exactly. You don't turn them off. The other thing is, 5 minutes is, we throw 5 minutes around like it's water, right? We throw 5 minutes around like it's going out of style. Hey, can you help me out? Yeah, give me 5 minutes. Hey, can you give me a call back? Yeah, I'll call you back in about 5 minutes. I wasted more than 5 minutes today on Facebook. Easily, right? We didn't even think twice about 5 minutes. In reality, 5 minutes is quite a bit of time. But that's all you need to make this initial contact. And again, that's what this is about. Okay? So your first step is to get permission to be there. Get on the schedule. Whatever you have to do. Again, whether it's talking to a manager or a receptionist or whatever. The next thing that's on the list, and this feeds into something that we talked about a little earlier. You need to share your enthusiasm for what you're doing. And I know that sales may not be your thing, right? Very few people get up in the morning and go, I'm going to sell something today. Some people do, and they're great at it. But for most people, sales is a necessary evil. It's just something that needs to be done so that the business can work. Right? And I understand that most of you are thinking, oh, sales is the last thing in the world I want to do. Part of why I'm telling you this is because if you do have to do it, there are ways to make it work for you. Okay? And who knows, you might be good at it. You might even look forward to it in some strange way. But you need to share your enthusiasm for what you're doing, whether it be because you're actually excited about the product or the station that you represent, or if you need to be a little more selfish about it, and there's nothing wrong with this, if this appointment goes well, you're going to get paid. So you should at least be excited about that, right? The one thing in the world you don't want to do is walk into somebody's office with your hat in your hand and say, hi, listen, thanks a lot for meeting me. I'm really excited to be here, and I hope that, you know, maybe you could take a little time or whatever and, like, I don't know, read over some stuff, because that'd be great for me. Right? We talked a little bit about the importance of confidence. Walking in with sort of that with a lack of confidence and thinking, I'm really sorry to bother you, you've already set yourself up to be told no to, because they're not going to take you seriously. But if I walk in and say, hi, listen, Tim, thanks a lot for meeting me today. I've got some great ideas, and I really can't wait to tell you all about it. Right? There's a world of difference between those two approaches. One of them says, I'm here to solve your problem. The other one says, I'm sorry to bother you today. Okay? So ask yourself, which one are you more likely to listen to? What's up?
You said that this is all about, like, you know, in faith.
Yes.
So do you get the meeting when you call them, or do you get the meeting in person?
What you do is, this is again why step one is important. Get on the schedule. Get in there in person. Then you have 5 minutes to make your case. But while you're making your case in that initial meeting, that's what this is all about.
Uh-huh.
So you get permission to be there in that initial meeting. You are enthusiastic about what you're talking about, whatever it is. Okay? And then we move on to the next step. Step three. This is going to sound a little weird, but it'll make sense, I promise. Promise them a reward. Now, this doesn't mean buy them lunch or give them a cookie or a ribbon. But remember, you've got 5 minutes. This is where your one-sheeter comes back into play. Give them something for their time, even if it was only the 5 minutes that you initially requested. This is where you give them your one-sheeter so that they can see, okay, you've done some initial work. You've at least scouted something out. And now I have a physical reminder of your presence. I know that we met because I have this thing in my hand, whether it be in black and white or color or multi-page or whatever it is. But you've given them something that they can look at again. And the great thing about this is you can follow up, which actually feeds into step number four. Give them a reward, which means give them something for their time. Again, this is where the one-sheeter comes into play. Step four, and this again needs to be reinforced because they're going to be thinking, how much am I on the hook for? Step four, they are under no obligation to just for talking to you, nothing bad is going to happen to them. You're not going to ask for a check. They're not going to be locked into a long-term contract. They don't have to give up their firstborn, right? There is literally no obligation for meeting with you for 5 minutes. The worst that's going to happen is you've given them a one-sheeter, and if they're really not interested, that's where this ends. But that's not really where this ends. Because you're under no obligation, even if they say no, if they slam the door in your face and say, see you later, bye, I really don't care. This is hard, but it's important. You need to follow up. And this is one of the things that people trying to break into this, or really any business, don't do. Because being rejected is hard. Nobody likes it. Okay? Whether this goes well or not, if things stop at step four, follow up. If things don't stop at step four, you have to follow up. Okay? But even if they say, no, I really don't care, call them the next day and thank them for meeting with you. Even if it was only for 2 minutes. And again, I know your natural reaction is probably, no. Why do I care? You didn't do anything for me. I'm not going to call you back. You slammed the door in my face. Nuh-uh. Remember, that's not what this is about. There could be any number of reasons why they couldn't give you what you wanted that day. Don't write them off immediately just because you didn't get what you wanted on the first try. Okay? Remember, this is about long-term relationships. It's also about persistence and showing them that you're serious about what you're talking about. If they can shut you down with one rejection, okay, they will. Go back. Call them. Say, thank you very much. I appreciate you meeting with me. And then follow up and see if they can give you some tips or pointers as to why things weren't right for them. You'd be surprised. One of the reasons why people don't mention this is because very few people do it. But I'll tell you straight up, I have gotten jobs from rejection because I called back and said, what can I do? How can I change the outcome? Because when you're meeting with people who are good at what they do, who are experts in their field, clients that you want to turn in, or prospects that you want to turn into clients, they actually really like to tell you what they think. They love to tell you what's on their mind. But nobody asks them, or at least very few people ask them. You know, if you have something that you're really passionate about, what would you do if somebody said, please tell me everything you know about Gibson guitars, right? Or everything you know about this or that, right? Tell me why Michigan football is awesome. That's a hypothetical, I understand. There you go. See, I knew I liked you. Anyway, my point is, everybody has something about which they feel they're an expert. And usually for your business folks that you're trying to turn into clients, what they do for a living is the thing that they're really good at. At least they think they are. So ask their advice. Follow up. You'd be surprised how often it can work. But if you don't do it, you'll never know. Which leads almost directly into step number 5. And this sounds really easy, but it's not. Step 5. In some ways the simplest and yet the hardest part about all of this. Ask. You need to ask for what you want. In this case, what you want is an appointment to talk about actually making a sale, about actually turning them into a client. And this is where things fall apart. Because when it comes time to make a commitment, even if it's a commitment for a future meeting, people start to get, again, a little timid. And it's just like when it's finally time to talk about money, people get a little, they pull back a little bit, and they start to get a little sheepish. And so there are some things you can do when you ask for an appointment to increase your odds of success. Number one, if you don't ask for the appointment, they can't say yes. Okay? You already don't have the appointment. They've already said no. So if you don't ask them for one, they can't say yes. Now, when you ask, there's a couple things you need to avoid. Just like we tell you when you're writing your own copy, you want to avoid yes or no situations. Because, and I don't care how good your idea is, if no is an option, somebody's going to take it. So don't put it in a yes or no context. Instead, You want to give them options. This is another thing about getting appointments or turning cold calls into appointments. You need to give your clients choices so that they feel like they're in control. Too often, when I asked the question last week, what do you think about salespeople? A lot of people said they're manipulative, they're pushy, they're trying to maneuver me into a corner, they're making me do things I don't want to do, right? And nobody likes that. Nobody likes that. Even when you sometimes get into those situations voluntarily, you know, if you sign up for something where somebody is directly in charge of you, we don't always like nobody likes feeling manipulated. Okay? So instead, you give them options. Give them options that they have control over, or at least that they think they have control over. By which I mean, instead of saying, hey, would you like to meet with me later this week? Oh, no, I can't. Again, don't give them the yes or no option. Instead, look at your date book or your PDA or whatever it is. Are there still PDAs? Look at whatever you look at wherever you keep your appointments, and say, okay, I've got an opening on Tuesday. I've got an opening on Thursday. Which one works better? Oh, neither one of them does. Okay, which one works better for you? Which day is better for you? Which day would you like? Again, there's not a direct yes or no option. The other thing you want to do is try to pin down a time, but again, do it by giving them options. Let's say we decide on Tuesday. All right, I've got an appointment at 11, I've got an appointment at 1. Which one works for you? Oh, neither one of those. Okay. Well, then you've still got an opening. You've still got an option to work with the client and figure out where you can fit them into your schedule. Okay, now the reality may be you don't have any appointments that day, but you've still given them options that they get to choose from. And that's the key. They get to choose. They get to decide when they meet with you. And again, it may not matter to you at all. I'll meet with a client at almost any time of day, depending on their business. But they need to have that control, right? They need to have that perception of being in control of what they do. What's up?
Would it be like beneficial, even if you have no appointments, to make them think that you have other appointments, like people want or are interested in what you're doing, and then saying like, "Oh, I can scratch this guy off and fit some."
Right. I would discourage you always from lying to a client. Do not say you have an appointment when you don't. There's a difference between saying, "Well, I'll move this guy around and I'll meet with you at 11." Just say, "I can meet with you at 11."
Okay.
That way, you have not lied to your client. Because again, the thing is, if you lie to your client, you're dead in the water. You just are. That's all there is to it. One of the things we talked about last week, and I want to reinforce this again, is a lot of times people think, well, I want to be friendly with my client. I want to work with my client and do whatever I can to hang out with them and be friendly. That's not what this is about. This isn't about friendliness. It's about being honest with your client, and that goes for almost anything you tell them as soon as you make that initial point of contact. You're in the spotlight, right? You're under a microscope. They're going to watch and see what happens. And they may decide, either they can trust you or they can't. So in that instance, again, it's about first impressions. Make sure that you don't give them any reason to doubt that you are not being straight with them. Okay? Mm-hmm. And again, I appreciate that you may have had a meeting with a salesperson or a manager or somebody who said, yeah, I don't care. Tell them whatever you need to tell them. You know? Say whatever you need to say. That works once. And again, that's not what this is about. This is about being able to go to that client again and again and again. Of course, in order to do that, you have to be successful the first time. And we'll talk about what to do once you turn the cold call into an appointment when we come back. I'm going to put you guys on break right now. 15 minutes, according to that clock on that wall, is 10:02, so 5 after noon. It's 5 after noon. We'll come back and see what else to do.